The time is just after 3 o'clock. You are listening to A Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Amanda Compton. Jeff Brown is away for the day. Today we'll have four guests. We have Kate Troll from the Sea Party. She'll be talking about the coastal management program, or trying to get the coastal management program. We'll also have the someone from the Perseverance Alaska Summer Theater Intensive coming in. And we'll have a couple of the participants who were in the electric car conversion class a couple weeks ago. And we'll also have someone, I don't know if it's a him or her name, named Bronze, talking about a picnic that Sigla and PFLAG, I believe, are hosting this weekend. So that Writer's Almanac and more coming up.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Wyoming's U.S. Attorney Kip Crofts says an increased presence in law enforcement on the Wind River Reservation is having an effect on high levels of crime there. Wyoming Public Radio's Tristan Autone has more.
U.S. Attorney Kip Crofts, along with members of the legislature's Tribal Select and Joint Judiciary Interim Committees, met on the Wind River Reservation earlier this week to discuss issues related to crime. Crofts says continued federal and state support may be the key to addressing the issue.
I'm pretty hopeful, pretty optimistic. I mean, things are looking better than I've ever seen before, and hopefully that'll continue. Doesn't mean we've wiped out crime, obviously, or other problems related to it, but at least we're doing the right thing now, I think.
Earlier this year, the state legislature failed to pass legislation that would have authorized Bureau of Indian Affairs officers to enforce state traffic laws on the reservation. The Wind River Reservation has received scrutiny for high levels of crime after a number of news exposés focused on brutal acts of violence. Croft says more outreach and public education could help lawmakers in understanding complex jurisdictional issues on the reservation and addressing the situation in the future. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autone.
Tribal residents often accuse the U.S. Census Bureau of missing the boat in Indian country. The census is often criticized for undercounting residents in isolated and rural reservations. As Charles Michael Ray reports, the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe is aiming to change that by conducting a survey of its own with funding from the Northwest Area Foundation.
The census count is a big deal for many communities. Census data is used to determine federal and state funding of all types, from housing to roads to healthcare. Those like Eileen Briggs with Cheyenne River Sioux Tribal Ventures say an inaccurate count can end up hurting local families.
So this is really the start of an effort on our reservation to collect more accurate data and gather information that's, you know, done our way and it's really our voice.
She adds that the survey is being conducted with the highest standards for methodology and transparency. She says the results are being published in December and follow-up surveys are planned for the coming years. For National Native News, I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City.
The Indigenous Language Institute is collaborating with Google on an endangered languages project. The project was launched this week, which includes the website endangeredlanguages.com to find and share information. The Indigenous Language Institute has worked with Google since 2011 to make audio clips, video clips, and other language resources available on the site. The project aims to help in language revitalization efforts. The cafe at the National Museum of the American Indian is vying for a Washington, D.C. Food Award. According to the Associated Press, the Mitzi Tom Native Foods Cafe has been nominated for a Rammy Award from the Restaurant Association of Metropolitan Washington. It's the first museum restaurant to be nominated and is a finalist in the category Casual Restaurant of the Year. The cafe has a rotating menu of Native foods. The winner will be announced over the weekend. During this week in 2004, Annie Mae Aquash was reburied in her homeland in Nova Scotia, Canada. The Mi'kmaq woman was murdered in South Dakota in 1975. Her body was discovered on the Pine Ridge Reservation. Her family waited decades for justice and are still seeking more answers about her death. In December 2010, John Graham, a Native man from Canada, was convicted of felony murder for his role in the kidnapping and shooting death of Aquash. Graham and Aquash were said to have been involved in the American Indian movement at the time of her death. Graham has been sentenced to life in prison. He appealed the decision, and the Supreme Court in South Dakota upheld the conviction and life sentence. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
I'm Billy Mills. As a grandfather and Olympic athlete, I know the importance of keeping kids healthy. The Children's Health Insurance Program in your state can provide your child additional health coverage, such as dental care, vision care, and emergency services. Enrolling your child can also help maximize health resources at your travel clinic. To learn more, contact your clinic or call 1-877-KIDS-NOW or visit insurekidsnow.gov.
Sponsored by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 3:06. You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon. I'm going to give you a quick forecast. We've got mostly sunny weather today, highs around 74 degrees. Tonight, partly cloudy, lows 45 to 52. Saturday, sunny, warmer, highs 79 to 85. So it looks like it's going to be a great weekend. Sunday, though, increasing clouds, a little bit cooler, highs around 72. And with me in the studio right now, I have Kate Troll. She is on the steering committee of the Sea Party. Good afternoon, Kate. Thanks for sacrificing some of your time on this beautiful day to come in.
Glad to be here.
Now, could you tell me a little bit what it means to be, what the Sea Party is, what it means to be on the steering committee, and the particular program or initiative, I guess, that you're working on right now?
All right. Well, several months ago, 30,000 Alaskans got together and passed out petition books and got, you know, signatures, 30,000 signatures, to put a ballot initiative on the August 28th. Ballot that will restore Alaska's coastal management program. So the Alaska Sea Party is sort of the group organizing to get out the vote, to encourage people to vote for the coastal management, restoring the coastal management. And, you know, we're making the rounds to explain to people what it's all about and that. So that would
bring me to two questions. You used the word restore, so that means we used to have one and we don't. And then you said you would bring it, tell people what it is all about, and what is it all about?
Do the first question.
The first question,
question
is restore. So we haven't had it for a little bit.
Well, yeah, we used to have it for 35 years in Alaska. When I first came up to Alaska in 1977, we had just recently passed the Coastal Management Program. And it was a program that was initiated by the federal government to give states control over development and protection of their coastline. It was recognizing that like 80% of the population lives along the coast. Many of our resource industries rely on access to the coast. We should be using our waterfront for its highest and best purpose. At the same time, it's also an area where we all love to recreate, particularly on days like this. Let's make sure we have those opportunities. So the federal government said, you know, it's really important that we plan for the highest and best use of our coastal resources. And we can't decide that by ourselves. What we're going to do is enable the states. So they set up a program whereby the states could set up a coastal management program, and they gave a big carrot to encourage the states. Not only did they give money, but the most important carrot is they said, we, the federal government, will be consistent with the decisions made by states with approved coastal management programs. So it's the only program like it that deals with natural resources where the federal government actually gives an element of control over to the states and the local districts, saying we will be consistent with.
But yet we do not have it right now.
We don't have it now because it went through some changes. In 2003, Governor Murkowski didn't like the program and really made some radical changes. And then it sort of limped along, and the coastal districts were not quite no longer players like they used to be. And Governor Murkowski, I guess, put it, a provision in there that it had to be renewed every year by the state legislature. And it failed by one vote this year to be reauthorized or funds put into the program. And that's what spurred the effort to say, okay, let's take it to the voters and let's get an initiative going. And that's where we are today.
As either a commercial use fisherman or as a recreator, are there any concrete changes we might notice, like during a summer when we have this program versus not having it?
Well, what's missing right now is we don't have the ability to influence federal decisions the way we used to, you know? And we are the only state in the country that does, coastal state, that does not have a coastal management program. Yet, we have more coastline than all the other states combined. So the first thing that's missing right now is our ability to, as a state, to weigh in. Sure, the feds, they might read our comments, but you know, without the coastal management program, there isn't that extra hand of obligation to consider and be consistent with what we want. So that's already happening now. And we no longer have coastal districts, local municipalities, interacting on permits that happen in their region. And the other big change that we no longer have is we no longer have a coordinated permit review authority. We used to have a program whereby if I'm going to build a dock, all I had to do was go to one office, and that would be the Office of Governmental Coordination. I know it sounds like an oxymoron, but it really did work. It did coordinate government. And you could find out about your core permit. If you needed fill, then your permits for streams and habitat protection, you know, DEC, Department of Environmental Conservation, all those permit reviews were all coordinated through the coastal management program. Now, if you want to build a dock, you got to go to each of those agencies individually, and you hope those agencies might talk. Right now, there's nothing to encourage them or force them to talk. And you don't get the input from the local municipality.
So it's a pretty big deal.
It's a very big deal.
And I so think. Whether or not you're a future dock builder, should you want to support this initiative, what does someone need to do?
Get out and vote on August 28th.
Okay.
That's the key thing.
August 28th, there's a vote.
There's a ballot initiative.
Yeah. And then there's other ways to support it, too, right? Someone could volunteer, donate money. Are you looking
for either of those? Absolutely, absolutely. And I would encourage people to go to our website, which is www.alaskacoastalmanagement.org, all one word. There you will actually get good information about what the Coastal Management Program is, what the history has been. You'll see an incredible list of supporters of at least 40, 50 mayors from around the state. Lots of legislators are all on board. So you can check it out that way, but you can also go to that website and donate and then find out what volunteer activities are ongoing.
Great. So you can either give money to support it. You can,
absolutely.
Or you could volunteer to help out. And we also, I'm neutral. You could also use a vote of support on November 28th.
Right. Right. And I guess I really want to stress that this really is sort of a grassroots campaign. We're really focused in on reaching out to a lot of the communities across the state, talking to chambers and rotaries. The opposition has a lot of big money behind them, and primarily, you know, being funded by the Alaska Oil and Gas Association. So they're going to put lots of big ads out. So it's sort of a David versus Goliath campaign that we have going on here. So yes, we need money to do some public radio spots. We know we can't compete with the super PACs, and we're not trying to do that by any means, but rather we still want to be able to get our message out on the radio and at events, and that does take dollars as well as hands and feet on the street.
And we is pretty inclusive, it sounds like. It's a pretty large group of users that would benefit from this.
Having lived in Alaska for over 35 years, and seeing how the program has impacted, you know, boat users, commercial fishermen, those that want to protect salmon streams, those that want to develop the North Slope. People don't realize that coastal management was a key component of developing the entire North Slope. What it did was it enabled us to determine, wait a minute, we want to protect the bowhead whales. Let's put some timing restrictions on the bowhead whales, you know, for when development can and can't occur. And so it has affected all the resource industries from oil and gas down to commercial fishing. It's affected the dock owners. It's affected the local coastal districts, the communities that want to have some control over what happens to make sure that their waterfront is being used for their highest and best use.
So someone can go to the website and get a hold of you if they wanted, not you, well, possibly you, but someone to donate money or to volunteer. What if they just wanted to wear a pin that said, hey, I support this initiative?
You can stop by our office, which is at 217 2nd Street, which is right above the Wells Fargo Bank downtown here in Juneau. Come into the office, get your pins, get your literature, sign up to volunteer. You can also call 500-7925.
That's 500-7925.
Yes, we do have staff there available to collect your dollars and your support.
All right. Well, thanks for coming in, Kate. Is there anything else you wanted to say?
I just want to emphasize that, you know, there's three key things that the Coastal Management Program is about. One, we see it as it empowers Alaskans in federal decisions that impact our coast. You know, the state has been very grumpy about the federal government, you know, not cooperating with us. Well, this is the door in. So that's the one of the key things coastal management does. The second thing is that it makes it easier to do business in Alaska by cutting through the red tape. I talked a little bit about that. And the third thing that it does is it gives Alaska communities an effective voice in figuring out how to balance all those competing demands. So the way I look at it is it's pro-state because it gives us access to the feds. It's pro-development because it cuts through to the red tape. And it's pro-community because it gives local coastal districts and municipalities access to permits.
And kind of like Advil, I mean, it reduces a lot of headaches, it sounds like, too, trying to manage different permitting, you were saying.
It just streamlines it a little bit, you know. So I think those are the takeaway messages, you know, pro-state, pro-business, pro-community.
Pro-state, pro-business, pro-community. And if you like those November
things,
28th.
Please get out and vote August 28th.
All right.
Absolutely.
Thanks for coming in, Kate.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 22nd of June, 2012. It was on this date in 1944, President Franklin Roosevelt signed the GI Bill into law. It offered small business or home loans at low interest to returning veterans and with no down payment requirement. It also offered to pay for college for veterans who wanted to go. At the time, nobody really thought that soldiers would take advantage of that. Only 10% of Americans had gone to college before the war, and the congressional committee who drafted the bill thought that that would still be true. But in the first year after the war, about 1 million returning soldiers applied for the money that the GI Bill offered them. During the run of the GI Bill, nearly 8 million veterans made use of the education opportunity. It's the birthday of the screenwriter and director Billy Wilder, born in Susa, Austria, 1906. Came to this country in the 1930s. He dated American women to improve his English, got a job writing scripts for Fox, worked his way up the ladder, ended up producing and directing films such as Double Indemnity, The 7-Year Itch, Some Like It Hot, and The Apartment. Billy Wilder, who said, an actor entering through the door, you've got nothing, but if he enters through the window, you've got a situation. It's the birthday of one of the only African-American women to get into the field of science fiction, Octavia Butler, born Pasadena, 1947, author of the novel Kindred, the story of a woman from 1976 who travels back in time to a plantation where she has to work as a slave alongside her ancestors. It's the birthday of the novelist Dan Brown, born Exeter, New Hampshire, 1964. His father was a math teacher at Phillips Exeter Academy. His first novel, Digital Fortress, came out in 1998 about cryptographers, went on to write Angels and Demons and Deception Point. None of the novels sold very well, but he went back to his protagonist of Angels and Demons, Robert Langdon, and wrote a new book about secret messages in Da Vinci's The Last Supper. It got a great review in the New York Times, and The Da Vinci Code in 2003 sold a ton of books. His next Robert Langdon book, The Lost Symbol, came out in 2009, and he says he's got at least ideas for a dozen new ones. And it was on this date in 1633, the Vatican ruled that Galileo was vehemently suspect of heresy for supporting Copernicus's theory that the sun and not the earth was the center of the universe. All of his books were banned, and he was placed under house arrest for the rest of his life. Here's a poem for today by Richard Wilbur, a pasture poem. This upstart thistle is young and touchy. It is all barb and bristle, threatening to wield its green jagged armament against the whole field. Butterflies will dare, nonetheless, to lay their eggs in that angle where the leaf meets the stem, so that ants or browsing cows cannot trouble them. Summer will grow old, as will the thistle, letting a clenched bloom unfold, to which the small hum of bee wings and the flash of goldfinch wings will come, till its purple crown blanches and the breezes strew the whole field with down. A pasture poem by Richard Wilbur from Anterooms, published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, iPad users can download the three most recent issues of Poetry Magazine, celebrating its centennial in 2012, at poetryfoundation.org. Written by Holly Vanderhaar and produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 3:23, just about, and I have, my name's Amanda Compton. I have Shona Strasser here from the Perseverance Theater. Hi, Shona.
Hi, Amanda. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Great.
She's going to talk about the Alaska Summer Theater Intensive, and I will let you just take it away.
Yeah, sure. Well, we're really excited because this Sunday marks our very first day of the Alaska Summer Theater Intensive, the ASTI program, as we like to call it, at Perseverance Theater. And Sunday is actually the registration and the barbecue at 6 p.m., and hopefully it stays sunny so we can register people in the sun. And basically, anybody is welcome to come take courses. And so this is designed specifically for adults because we do a lot of youth programming. And what we found kind of over the years is that we don't have a lot of programming training-wise for adults. So this grew out of that need to, you know, I'm a theater geek, theater artist, and there's not a whole lot of training opportunities in Alaska for me. And I was like, hey, where do I get training? Well, we bring in folks from down south, and we have two really fabulous instructors coming up. We have Leon Inglesrud. He directed The Blue Bear a couple of years ago, if you saw that. A beautiful piece of theater. Went to Anchorage this last season, too. He'll be up. He'll be doing directing, and he'll be doing an acting course. And then Dan LaFranc will come up, and he's a playwright, and he's a fabulous playwright. I love his plays. They're really beautiful and funny and poignant. And he teaches a playwriting course in the evening. So those are the two guys that are kind of coming to, you know, help us out. We're really excited about that. So the schedule is interesting. I mean, it's a schedule that kind of is conducive for people who have jobs during the day, and then it's also conducive for people who have days off. So we go Monday through Friday, 1 to 5 p.m. is the acting class, and then we have 6 to 10 p.m. We have two classes happening simultaneously. One is a directing course, and the other one is the playwriting course that Dan is teaching. So all those things are happening all week long, and then that's Monday through Friday. And then on Saturday of next week, we do kind of a composite. So we'll, you know, put all the plays with playwrights, with the actors, with the directors, and see what we come up with.
Yeah. But could someone do all of them?
Someone could do...
I guess you'd have to choose one of the evening classes.
Correct. Right? Yeah, you'd have to choose one of the evening classes.
Yeah. You could be the boss and in the play.
Totally.
Okay. Are you going to do the... intensive?
Yeah. I did it. Last year was our first year of the program, and it was a lot of fun, and we learned a lot, and it was a really good time, and I'll be doing it for sure.
So registration is?
Registration is Sunday, really we've been registering people for the last couple months, but we have a registration and a welcome barbecue on Sunday. So if you're not signed up yet, no biggie. Come on Sunday and, you know, register.
And eat.
That's right. And so, the really great thing about this is actually it's for theater artists who've been doing this professionally for a long time. Like, I've been doing theater my whole life. But it's also for the person that has never done anything, you know? I mean, it's for everybody. So I think that's the instructors are really good at kind of curbing it, tailoring it to the needs of the community.
So if you're a novice, you could feel comfortable signing up and, okay.
Yes, completely. Yeah.
And so how many people do you have signed up so far?
Right now, I think we have about 16-ish. I think about 16. And, you know, we don't really have a target number, really. We just have spots. We just have some training opportunity that we want people to take advantage of.
And you said you did this last year.
Yeah.
And what was the format last year, similar?
Last year it was pretty similar, yeah. So we also had a voice instructor last year named Leslie Ishii, who came up, a fabulous actress from L.A., and she was scheduled to come up this year too, but she's had some illness in the family, so.
Okay.
Yeah, but mostly the same. The only thing that we're changing this year is we're adding a day component. Last year we did all evenings, and this year we're doing a day component too, just to make it a little bit more intensive.
Okay. And is there a minimum age cutoff? Like, should someone have a very mature teenager that wants to do this? Is that okay? Or?
Well, I would say give me a call and we can talk about it because I think I want to know experience pretty much.
Okay. Yeah. So what's your phone number?
My phone number at the theater is 364-2421. And that's 364-2421. And you can always catch me on email, shona@perseverancetheater.org. You can check out our website, www.perseverancetheater.org. There's registration on the website. There's schedule on the website. There's more information than you would ever want to know on the website. So.
Great. Yeah. Is there anything else you wanted to cover?
Not so much. I just wanted to let people know that it's just a really good time and I hope it's not intimidating. So the word intensive does seem a little intimidating, but mm-hmm. It's more about actually finding time as artists to really dive into our subject matter because it's hard to find time to do that.
So whether you're experienced or an amateur, it sounds like a great opportunity to take advantage of, and you can register online. You can register at the barbecue formal registration period at 6 o'clock on Sunday
at the theater.
Okay. And they can also look online or call you. So thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thank you, Amanda. Appreciate it.
All right, have a great rest of your sunny day.
I will.
looking, babe. She's looking good now. Hush, baby, 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 baby. No, 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 don't you cry.
3:36. You're listening to A Juno Afternoon. I am your host. My name is Amanda Compton, and I am in the studio with Steve Landermeyer and Daryl Weatherall, who both were participants in the electric car conversion class that happened a couple weeks ago. And we're going to talk about that. Would you guys mind introducing yourselves and then giving a little bit of your background, why you took the class, and then we'll start talking about the class.
You bet. My name's Steve, and I took the class, it was just a couple weeks ago now, I guess, because I've been interested in electric vehicle conversions, especially over the last couple years, you know, with the limited road system we have in Juneau, and the most of the commuting that I do for work is definitely within the range of what electric vehicles can do, and I like the idea of never having to buy any more gasoline and put in my car. So I've been interested in doing a project of my own. I work with DC Electrical Systems professionally, and I'm into that kind of stuff. I like tinkering and projecting. And I knew about the program that's offered at UAF, and when I heard it was being offered here in Juneau, I jumped at the opportunity to secure a spot.
Was it hard?
It was not difficult to secure a spot, but I got, I think the last one, I think you might, okay, so,
so.
The course was not difficult. It was intense. There was a lot of time that went into it over a short period of time. We had, I think, 3 evening sessions and then 2 full days, if I remember correctly. And we had to divide and conquer, so there was a lot that needed to get done to wrap the project up, and we sort of partnered off with small groups, and we each had our own little section of the project that we did.
Let's get an introduction from Daryl, and then we'll go into maybe the different groups that you or how the class was formatted.
Hi, my name is Daryl. My background, I'm an electrical engineer, and obviously I've got a lot of interest in electricity and how motors work, and it's something that we've been looking at. I happen to work at Alaska Electric Light and Power as well, and it just seems like a perfect fit for Juno, and you know we're kind of in the process of evaluating some electric cars in our company. We have an electric forklift. We've just recently acquired an electric Volt Chevrolet, and just thought it would be a good opportunity to see how we can better match electric vehicles to our hydro source. And
could you guys just give a little explanation for those of us who might not know what an electric car is, and when you say a good fit for Juno, why that makes sense?
Sure. Electric cars use banks of batteries, so a collection of individual batteries. You put them all together, and the energy that's needed to propel your vehicle from point A to point B is all stored in that battery, or that battery bank. And so because we have relatively inexpensive electrical utility rates compared especially to the rest of the state, there's a cost benefit there. But basically, if you can plug your car in and charge the battery while you're sleeping, for instance, and then use that stored energy to drive around during the day when you need to be getting from point A to point B, you can use an electric vehicle basically to replace the internal combustion engine that's in all cars that are not electric. So get rid of the engine, get rid of the radiator, get rid of the fuel tank, get rid of the exhaust system, and in its place put basically an electric motor that runs off of a battery bank that you charge.
Mm-hmm. And one of the I think the reservations that a lot of the public has about electric vehicles is their limited range, especially down south. You know, you can drive hundreds of miles on a single tank of gas. But up here in Juneau, we don't really have that problem.
Well, you live in one state and work in another or something like
that. Yeah, where you might have a 30, 40-mile commute or you want to go on a vacation, you know, and you're driving 400 miles.
It's too bad for you guys in Juneau.
Here, of course, you know, you probably have a 10-mile commute tops to get to work, limited road system. And, you know, the average person's probably can drive on a single charge, make it to work, get their groceries, and still get back to the house and plug in without ever having to fuel up.
And from your perspective, working at the electrical company, or is it electric company, there's the possibility down the line, or maybe not, correct me if I'm wrong, that should someone have a longer range that they're driving, there might potentially be places they could plug in at some point?
The infrastructure in Juneau needs some work as far as quick charging. But most vehicles can plug into a standard 120-volt outlet, and slow charge typically takes about 8 to 12 hours, I believe, for this particular electric vehicle that we built in class. And it's really a function of how large of a battery bank you have.
What about temperatures? Like, would that affect it if it was cold? Or?
You bet. Battery performance is impacted by temperature for sure. So we took some steps to help insulate the battery bank underneath anyway so that it wasn't in direct contact with the aluminum box that the batteries all went in. Ideally, batteries perform best when not cold. And so electric vehicles are not a panacea for all driving issues. But if you live in an area like Juneau and you do have a limited commute and you can take some steps to help keep your batteries from getting too cold, then they should perform really well. When they're being charged at night, they're going to be you're not really running the risk of having them die because of the cold or anything like that. So this 8 to 12 hour period, you know, when's the most ideal time to charge your car? It's at night when you're sleeping, and that'll help keep the batteries charged and up to temperature. And then for the most part, you can use it throughout the day, and maybe you have an outlet at work that you can plug into. If you have a 20-mile commute, for instance, you can also charge it for 8 hours during a work day, of course, with the permission of the people that you work for.
And so the class was 5 days, and you guys had you had an instructor come down from Fairbanks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then how did it work?
Well, I actually missed the first couple hours of the first day, so maybe Daryl can field that one.
Well, we started off by having a little classroom session and looked at a couple circuit diagrams. And, you know, he basically went through and explained all the different components at a very high level, you know, and how the battery system integrated with the battery controller, how the charger tied into everything. We discussed some of the safety things, you know, and cutoff switches. In case of overheating or overcurrent. Basically, he just cut us loose and we started building.
So then did you choose what groups you divided up into?
Yeah, we broke into, I believe, about 5 different systems. So one group would work on just installing the electric motor and putting that together. Another group actually welded up a battery box and installed all the batteries. A third group did the motor control system. And I believe there was also
There were some other sort of ad hoc groups for smaller projects throughout the project. I felt really lucky to have missed the group assignments, because when I finally made it to class, I sort of didn't join one group in particular and was able to sort of float from group to group to get more of an idea about what went into each part of the program. That was beneficial for me. But I think everybody worked really well together. We had a lot of highly experienced people in the class. We had some people that with no experience in electrical systems whatsoever. We divided and conquered and got a tremendous amount of stuff done in a pretty short period of time.
Mm-hmm. And so how do you feel at the end of the class? Like, your knowledge has been raised significantly. We're interested in building a car. You worked on a particular car while you were there, right?
Yeah, it was a 1983 Jeep Scrambler. really cool car. You know, the nice thing about electrical vehicle conversions is you want a vehicle that doesn't have a working engine. So you're talking about maybe getting a car for relatively no money, and then taking that broken engine out and replacing it again with the battery pack and all the other stuff that goes into it. So I felt great after the course. It definitely demystified a couple of things. It's always good to get some experience on any kind of project you might want to do on your own. Like if you want to build a house, it's advantageous to work as a carpenter at some point before then. So yeah, I feel like the whole idea was demystified, and it really is just it's a relatively simple system, and there's only there's a finite number of components, and you put them together the right way and you're on your way.
Great.
What was unique about this particular design is that it actually leaves the transmission and the clutch installed in the vehicle. And so you're literally just swapping out the engine block for an electric motor. Yeah, but in order to do that process, you actually have to take the clutch, remove it in the bell housing, remove it from the transmission. So it was actually an opportunity to learn a lot, you know, about the mechanics of how a car operates and how the transmission works, and actually get in and rebuild the clutch. So there's actually some kind of cool stuff that you don't normally get into.
What's this I hear about a 4th of July float?
Details are sketchy.
I can answer about it. Okay. I also sit on the Juno Commission on Sustainability, and I just raised the fact that we took the class to the commission, and we just kind of collectively thought it would be a great idea to have an electric vehicle float. And so we rounded up, I believe there's two volts, there's a little tricycle electric vehicle, there's a Forest Service truck that is electric, and I believe...
What about that forklift or whatever you're doing?
Well, we're talking about that. Okay. We may use that to hold the banner.
Oh.
So. There you go.
All right. Is there anything else you guys wanted to add?
Stay tuned for this course being offered again at UAS in the future. There's nothing set in stone about that, but I had high hopes leaving the course that this is something that could be easily replicated in the future, and I think there's a tremendous amount of interest in the whole panhandle.
There was
not
a waiting
just in
list
Juneau.
For this class, I understand.
There ended up being a waiting list. I think that what we proved in this course is that the project is doable in the time frame that we had, and the course is flexible to the point where we're meeting in evenings during the week and on the weekend. And so I really hope that the course happens again and we expose more panhandlers to electric vehicles. There are many other communities besides Juneau where this really does make a lot of sense. Typically wherever you have hydropower and you're not paying, you know, the kilowatt hour rates for burning diesel and whatnot, where your power's got to come from somewhere, and to charge the batteries, that is. And it can be cost effective if you're in a place that's got hydropower. So I'm hoping this happens in Juneau again and we expose more people to electric vehicles and we'll start seeing more of them on the road.
Well, thanks for coming in, Steve. Thanks for coming in, Daryl.
Thanks for having us.
If there's anything else, Daryl, you wanted to say?
Go out and convert a car.
Go out and convert a car.
Yeah, get in touch with Angel at SEAC if you have other electric vehicle project ideas or whatever. She sort of brought Mike down from UAF to make this happen. And so if anybody's interested in getting in touch with the people who are in the class or asking questions or putting together their own project,
Or donating a car to the next class.
Absolutely, donating a car. Sharing knowledge. I know there's some other electric vehicle enthusiasts here in town.
We know there's some yards out there, too, full of donor cars.
Exactly. So get in touch with Angel at SEAC, Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, and we'll see you at the next course, hopefully.
All right. Thanks for coming in, guys.
Thanks, man.
Love and happiness, yeah, something that can make you do wrong, make you do right, yeah, love.
Love and happiness. But wait a minute, something's going wrong. Someone's on the phone, 3 o'clock in the morning, yeah, talking about how she can make it right, yeah. Happiness is when you really feel good about somebody. There's nothing wrong being in love with someone. Yeah. Oh, baby. Love and a happiness.
Love and happiness.
Love and a happiness.
Love and happiness.
Oh.
Every day, I see how rape and sexual abuse change the lives of Alaskans.
Victims can be male or female, young or old, but their pain is the same.
If you're a victim of sexual assault, don't stay silent. There is help, and there is hope.
Call your local shelter or your 24-hour crisis line. Asking for help changes everything.
Together, we can stop violence and abuse. Real Alaskans choose respect.
Visit andvsa.org or call 1-800-799-SAFE.
I'm Lori Morton.
It's 3:53. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. Right now in the studio, I have three guests. I have Bronze, Jason, and Lynn. And I know, Bronze, you're from Sigla. Jason, are you part of the same group?
I'm here with Bronze from Sigla as well.
And Lynn?
I'm with Sigla and with PFLAG.
PFLAG. And why don't you guys tell me a little bit about why you're in the studio, what you're promoting?
Well, we're having a picnic this weekend, start tomorrow.
And who's we?
PFLAG and Sigla together are collaborating on a gay pride picnic. We have one annually every year, and we're having one at Sandy Beach on Saturday from 4 to 8 p.m. And it's open to the public, and we're here to talk about that and invite people to participate if they would like. We're going to be having all kinds of food and games and fun and music and sunshine, I think.
Hopefully, yeah. It does sound like it's going to be nice. And so tell me again the date and time of this.
It's going to happen on Saturday.
Saturday.
4 to 8 p.m.
4 to 8 p.m.
Sandy Beach, shelter number 2.
All right. And
look
that's
for
the
pride
one.
Flags.
Okay. Look for the pride flags.
And then so also we wanted to talk about the concert. There's a tonight, right? This is Friday.
Oh, right.
At 5:30 tonight at Marine Park, the Pride Chorus is going to be having a free concert that's open to the public. It's also a time for them to sell their cookbooks because they're raising money to go to the the 2002 Gala Chorus Festival in Denver, Colorado, and that's actually a pretty big deal for them.
What's the Gala Chorus?
It's gay and a lesbian. I'm not sure what the last A is, but it's international. So there will be, I think, more than 100 different choruses there. And it's for fun and encouragement.
Uh-huh. So how many people typically show up to one of these picnics? This is the, third annual, did you say?
We've been doing it for many years. CEGLA's been around in Juneau for over 30 years now.
Wow.
PFLAG's been here a long time as well.
Right, probably 20 years.
And we do this picnic pretty much every year. Mm-hmm. It averages, we've had people I think the most I've ever counted at one was about 75 or 80 people.
So people are, everyone's encouraged to attend, right? I mean, it's friends and lesbian, friends.
Family.
Family. Yep. Let's go through those
supportive
acronyms. PFLAG stands for?
For Parents, Family, Friends of Lesbians and Gays.
Okay. And CEGLA?
Southeast Alaska Gay and Lesbian Alliance.
Okay. So whether or not you're in Southeast Alaskan, heterosexual, homosexual, supporter of, you're welcome to come to this picnic from 4 to 8?
Right. Supportive people are totally
supportive
welcome.
Supportive people.
Yeah.
Okay. And then there'll be a barbecue, and people are encouraged to bring an extra dish,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly. We're hoping that they'll bring some salads and desserts to share.
We're
going to provide some standard grilling items.
Okay.
And I think it's going to be a fun time.
Great.
We've got somebody lined up to do some music for
us. Yeah,
I was
going to ask you.
So.
You've got some music lined up.
We do.
Okay. Someone from the community will be playing?
It's not live music. There's going to be a person who's bringing a sound system, and he's going to spin some tunes. His name is
really?
Adam.
Adam. So, okay.
Yeah, and he's going to do some music for us. And then we're probably going to have some games. I would guess there'll be some Frisbee. We had kind of a toss game that was like beanbag toss game that was similar to horseshoes. We had that before. Might have that again. Some other fun stuff.
And anything else the community should know about this picnic?
I just also wanted to mention that anybody who wants more information about CEGLA or PFLAG can visit our website.
What's
the website? CEGLA.org, CEGLA.org. And we also host PFLAG's website there and the Gay Straight Alliance at all the schools here. We have one in both high schools and the university, and we host their web pages as well. And so all of that's accessible from CEGLA.org.
Is there anything else you wanted to add?
No, I think I'm good.
So we've got a picnic, and then we also have, tonight, we have the chorus.
That's right. And there is Philly Fatals Saturday night, right?
Yes, there's also a drag show tomorrow night at the Rendezvous at 8 o'clock. We have a handful of local performers that will be performing, so it should be pretty fun. I know the last show was pretty fun, so perfect time to go out and enjoy yourselves.
Sounds great. Well, thanks for coming in, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
I'll see you maybe this weekend or tonight.